Hello and welcome to Launch. We're broadcasting live from Atlanta, Georgia. I'm Ron Reardon. My co-host is Bill McHenry. Bill, how are you today?
Great, Ron. I'm a little wet today. I'm up in Michigan, and it's kind of a rainy day.
Okay. Were you out there building an ark?
That was very tempting last night, believe me.
I'm sure. Well, you know, Bill, in Launch, we focus on the launching of a business, you know, the planning that precedes a launch, the launch itself, the missteps, the successes of the launch, so that entrepreneurs can successfully navigate their launch. This morning, we're featuring Mark Raylan of Obvious Ideas LLC. But before we get started, Bill, could you thank today's sponsor?
Oh, sure, Ron. Today, our sponsor is Patents & More. Patents & More, protecting your innovation and connecting you to the resources you need for success.
Well, that's super. So can you introduce our today's guest, Bill?
Sure, Ron. I'm honored. Today, we have Mark Raylan. Mark is the CEO of Obvious Ideas. And just to give you an idea of Mark's long list of accomplishments, he was the director of classified technology development for a Fortune 500 company. In addition, he was a national security agency liaison to the Korean government. And that was all before he started Obvious Ideas. Mark actually holds five patents under application. Mark's inventions and products have been widely publicized in magazines and trade journals around the country as well. But it's interesting, today Mark is going to help us understand the concept of separation between the inventing planet, where there are no rules, and the business planet, where everything is governed by a set of rules. Every inventor headed into that market, as you know, Ron, must first pass through the business planet. And when you don't know the neighborhood, you may want to get a map. So Mark will help us walk through this.
That sounds great.
So, Mark, how are you today?
I'm well. Thank you. How are you?
Super, thanks. Tell us, Mark, what do you mean by the inventor planet and the business planet?
Well, I use that as a metaphor when I give talks to inventor groups because it seems to be really easy for people to visualize. But it is very much like it sounds. When you think of the worlds of the business planet and the inventor planet, they're really like two different planets in the same universe.
Well, I know inventors have certain skill sets and everything. Is it possible for an inventor to even survive on the business planet?
It is. Well, on the business planet, there are no rules. You know, think of it as bouncing around in one of those inflatable kids' bouncy toys. You can do whatever you want. But on the business planet, everything is governed by rules. The inventor planet has no gravity. You can literally defy physics if you like. But on the business planet, we have the rule of commerce, the rule of finance, the rule of law, the rule of supply and demand, even rules that dictate the trends in consumer purchasing. These rules all come together to form a sense of order on the business planet that you don't need on the inventor planet. So can an inventor live on the business planet? Absolutely. They can actually do quite well if they take the time to learn the customs, just like going anywhere. They have to understand they're a guest. They don't come from the business planet, so they have to pay attention when they're on the business planet. They have to show the people on the business planet respect. They have to respect the fact that this is what these people do for a living. The good news is that the people on the business planet are generally very nice. They're going to help them. If they know that they're there and they want to learn, they're always going to help them, and they're going to want them to succeed, and they're going to teach them how to navigate the world of the business planet.
Well, you know, the vendors that I work with, a lot of times they say, I've got an idea, and I just want to sell it to somebody and let them run with it. Do you sometimes meet resistance from inventors that they just don't want to go there to the business planet?
Sure, sure. I mean, let's face it. The fact is that they're intertwined, so you're never going to monetize an invention without walking past the business planet. It's just not going to happen. The system isn't set up that way. So sometimes that's as simple as a license deal where you're putting the innovation out there and saying, this is what I want. I really don't want to be involved in it. And sometimes it's all the way through the process. Most most inventors have this illusion that they can sell product to Kroger from their basement. And what the Business Planet does is teach them that that's really an illusion. That's a nice dream. It's a nice thing to think about, but it's not reality. And so some inventors go to the Business Planet and go, okay, I want to sell this out of my basement, and they learn very quickly that's not practical, and they go back to a licensing deal, or they take the time to learn the process and actually get a house over on the Business Planet.
Well, Mark, tell us, what are the top three things an inventor should do to make sure they can survive the business on the Business Planet?
Well, I think the biggest one is really respect, a mutual respect. Inventors have a really tough time with this reputation of, you know, the Doc Brown and crazy inventor. Some inventors are unrealistic. They go in and they go into the Business Planet with this chip on their shoulder. The inverse is true as well. There are some people on the Business Planet you should watch out for, so there's a lot of back and forth. The most important thing that anyone can do, which is really just very germane to business in general, is have respect for the person on the other side of the table. And if the inventor goes in and respects the fact that this is what this person does for a living and opens their mind to that, they're gonna do well. The second,
I'm sorry to interrupt you. I was just going to ask you, I was thinking we have a lot of listeners that are really on the Business Planet too, and kind of the reverse of that. What would the person on the Business Planet, what can he do to help, the three things he could do to help an inventor?
I think it's really be very in tune to the fact that this inventor just came over from a planet where there are no rules. So don't shun them for that. Don't look down on them for that. That's just their environment. There aren't any rules. They are in their basement, and they're tinkering around. And in fact, in order to successfully invent, you really have to discard a set of rules. You really have to be able to try things that don't make sense or aren't intuitive. That isn't the world of the Business Planet, so the businessmen should look at that inventor and go, okay, I understand your mindset, and respect that mindset. That mutual respect between the inventor industry and the business industry, if you will, is really key to the cooperation that ultimately leads to commercialization of products. So both of them open their minds and in that discussion and understand they come from two different planets. They don't come from the same neighborhoods, and not one of them is acting weird. They're just from two different planets. And when you sit down at that table, you can have a conversation. The important thing, the third most important thing for an inventor living on the Business Planet is to take responsibility. Oftentimes, inventors in the Business Planet don't want to take responsibility for their successes. They want someone else to do it, and they want to hand it off, and they want to continue operating without the rules, but they want their business partner to have to suffer all the rules. And the fact of the matter is, it's always a collaboration. You always have to take responsibility for your own success. No one's doing it for you. And if you want to commercialize your invention, you're going to have to take the time and energy to learn the business end of this industry.
You know, when you were talking earlier about most of the folks on the Business Planet are friendly, but you do need to be careful, what immediately came to my mind was the very first Star Wars movie where they're going into the bar. And, of course, most of the people, you know, are fine, but then some people come up and says, you know, he doesn't like the way you look, you know.
Yeah, no, that's very true. You know, I think that in business, in general, you have business leaders, you have entrepreneurs, you have workers, you have all this big cross-section of people. But as people, we're actually, I think most people are very kind. And we love to teach and talk about our craft. And in business, it's no different. So when you see an inventor who you know is you know, doesn't have those skills, doesn't have the business skills to be able to do this, oftentimes the natural reaction of the business person is to help them. The problem comes in when you get a paranoid inventor, you get an inventor who's not working realistically with realistic expectations, or, you know, all their family and friends told them how smart they were, so their head's a little inflated, and their dog told them how rich they were going to be, and so they've got this crazy expectation, and you've got all this stuff, and all of a sudden the business guy says, you know, hey, you're a little out of whack, and I'm not going to take the time to help you. That's why it's so important for the inventor to understand they're a guest in that environment. You know, we joke about helping inventors. I love to help inventors, but I really hate to do it in a hail of gunfire.
I understand
and,
that.
And oftentimes, I know you guys have experienced that same thing.
Yep, because unrealistic expectations that, you know, they've got a $1 million idea, and especially, you know, paranoid. We always say there's only two kinds of inventors, the paranoid and more paranoid.
Yeah, it's really true. You know, in all my presentations I give around the country and talking to different people, you know, I occasionally run into a real jerk. But for the most part, most of the people I meet are very nice. And I think a lot of people really do want to help people.
Right.
You know, so very good point.
Yeah, well, you know, metaphors are very powerful for, you know, very clearly creating a picture in someone's mind as to you know, exactly what's going on. I think you've, with the different planets, you've come up with a really great metaphor to help the inventor understand that they've got to go from one planet to another.
I agree. I mean, inventors are generally visual thinkers, and we all think in 3D. And so the metaphors, and I use metaphors a lot when I give talks to inventor groups, because they are something that they can latch onto, because they're visualizing these two planets. And what we want them to visualize is the bridge between the two planets.
Okay, well, if we picture that bridge, you know, between the inventor planet and the business planet, in fact, you know, kind of visualize the inventor walking across that bridge into a world that they know little about. What role do the invention companies, the license brokers, patent attorneys, and so on play in an inventor's arrival to that business planet?
Well, you know, it's interesting in staying on our path of metaphors, because the guy with the most metaphors wins. it's very much like getting off a cruise ship. And I don't know if many people in the audience, I'm sure, have taken cruises. And you go to that Caribbean island, and it's beautiful, and you get off the ship, and there's all kinds of locals standing there at the port waiting on you. And for the most part, you know, they've got big warm smiles, and for the most part, they really don't have any intention to hurt you. They do have intentions. Some of them have intentions of getting you to their T-shirt shop. Some of them have intentions of getting you into their cab. Some of them have intentions of simply answering your questions if you have one. So you have this whole cross-section of people there to greet you, but they all have different intentions, but intentions nonetheless. So when you get off that ship, you don't have any idea who these people are. You don't have any idea how to greet them or what their motivations are. You know that you've got some money in your pocket, and you want that perfect souvenir. Well, that's kind of like an invention in your pocket and a certain amount of resources that you have to get that thing rolling. And so when you look at that in comparison, it's really very much the same thing. Well, the service providers in the inventor industry, whether that be invention submission companies or this new class of inventor contests that are popping up, or patent attorneys, and of course the list goes on. There's a lot of service providers in the inventor industry. Many of those people are good, kind, honest people who are there just selling their wares. That's commerce. We like that. Several of them are kind of shady, and a few of them are just downright crooks. And just like that port, we've got that whole cross-section from the guy taking you to the T-shirt shop to the pickpocket. And that's really the way the inventor should envision that entrance, that port to the business planet, is walking off that bridge and seeing this grouping of people all there all have services, all have an intent, all want to get something, some of them good, some of them okay, some of them crooks. And that's really the role they play. The inventor can't get through the neighborhood of the business planet without some of this help. It's just the way it is.
Yeah, my wife and I took a cruise to the Bahamas a couple of years ago, and it was exactly like you said. Every port of call we went to, there they all were. And we'll be taking a cruise to Alaska, and I'm sure it's going to be a kind of different scenario in Alaska than the Bahamas, but there's still going to be some folks there that would like for you to, you know, to do commerce with them.
That's right.
They're just going to have coats on, Ron.
That's right.
They're going to be dressed different.
It's going to be just going to be just a little colder.
And you're going to get off in your flowered shirt and flip-flops.
Not in Alaska, no way.
So, but that's very true, and when you think about it in those terms, it's often much easier for the inventor to understand and to wrap their mind around the fact that they're walking into a place they don't know. So what's the key to survival and walking into a place you don't know? Preparation. It's taking the time. I know I've heard you guys speak often, and most of the professionals in this industry speak about education. Education is a key to that. If you get off that boat in Alaska and you've got, at a very minimum, a map to the city you're in, you've armed yourself with enough education that when the guy puts you in the cab and starts driving you the wrong way, at least you can challenge that. And that's the key to working with service providers in the industry. Do your due diligence. Do your education and come in at least a little armed. You're not going to be, you know, enough to be considered a local, but at least you've taken some steps to prepare.
Yeah, and in part of that,
well, you know, Mark, is it possible then, do you think, for an inventor, or really for that matter, a business person, to live simultaneously on both planets?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I've been doing it I've had a house on both planets for a long time. You can do it. The inventors that are the most successful in doing that are the people who have professionally grown up in business roles or have a natural entrepreneurial bent to them. They're always going to be the most successful because they have an intuition about the business. But even a person who grows up with no business responsibilities professionally and invent something can transition over to the business planet and, survive there very comfortably as long as they take the time to respect their environment, just like you would if you were hiking in the jungle, and to educate yourself, just like you would if you were going to a new country, and put all that together and learn now, just like you would if you moved to India. The first few days, you'd be pretty uncomfortable. First few weeks, you'd be a little more comfortable. And by the time you were there a year, you'd know your way around. And it is very much the same way when you're trying to learn the skills of the business planet. You learn who to ally yourself with. You learn who you can trust and who you can't trust. Sometimes you learn that the hard way. But every one of us who's grown up in business has had to do that. So absolutely, they can survive. And the inverse is true as well. Can a business person really survive on the inventor planet? Sure, it's kind of like going on vacation. You get to go to a place where you're shedding all those rules, and you get to immerse yourself in an environment where anything goes. And so if you respect that environment for what it is and let yourself go mentally that way, then sure, you can survive in that environment.
Well, you know, I understand what you're talking about because, you know, my wife is from Mexico. That's where she was born. And so the first time I went to Mexico, I was really kind of stressed out because I was way out of my comfort zone. I didn't know the language that well or the customs or anything. But the more I visited and returned and everything, then I got to, you know, was more and more comfortable until I was nice and relaxed.
Right. That's exactly right. And the same is true. That's why this whole, you know, planet or cruise ship or vacation metaphor works so well with inventing. because it's something we've all experienced at one point or some level or another. And all you're doing is kind of applying it to the business of inventing. And it fits very well.
Well, Mark, you sound very passionate about this concept and working with inventors. Why is it so important for people to understand the dynamic between inventing and business?
Well, because inventing is where dreams happen and business is where dreams die. And excuse me, when you peel away the layers of the onion, you really see very quickly that this is a very serious matter. This is not about widgets or tchotchkes. This is not about ugly green paper with dead guys on it. This is about human being interaction and the realities of life. Every day, somewhere in the United States, there's a conversation happening across a kitchen table with a husband and a wife where one of them has come up with this great new idea. All their neighbors and friends have told them how smart they were. Everyone's told them how rich they're going to be. Every single one of them has told them they would buy a million of them. And they're making that decision in somewhat of an educational vacuum, if you will, whether to spend their last dollar or cash in the kids' college fund or cash in the 401k and start contacting these service providers, because they know that this idea is so strong that it actually represents their ability for the American dream, their ability to lift their family up out of normalcy into that, you know, that show How'd You Get So Rich? And they know, they just know this idea is the one to do that. So this isn't about $20 or $1,000 or any of that. When you boil this down, this is about hope, and this is about someone's ability to take care of their families. For the novice, the garden variety, the garage and basement inventor, that's really what this is all about. Those of us, you, me, Bill, we all have risen up through these processes. We have an obligation by virtue of our position in the industry. We have an obligation to make sure we understand the motivations of these people who have not learned the lessons we've all learned. So it is a passionate thing for me because I spend 3 or 4 nights a week on the phone with these inventors. I mean, literally, they call me up and say, hey, what do you think about this? Or, hey, will you look at my invention? And unfortunately, many of those conversations are after they've gone through this myriad of service providers. Excuse me. And oftentimes it's after they've spent, you know, much of their money. I had a call recently with a lady who developed a product that was horribly developed. There was no way it was going to be retail viable. But she had borrowed $300,000, mortgaged her house, got money from her friends, families, and the three Fs that finance inventors, friends, families, and fools, and gone into debt. And she had rented a warehouse that had 150,000 units of this ill-developed product in it that was never going to go anywhere. And she was in tears. She had no idea what to do. And so it is really very much about people and the humanity and social impact inventing has on people and their dreams.
Yeah.
And we have a huge responsibility to make sure we can do what we can do to help those people.
That's correct.
You know, Mark, Ryan and I both have had those kind of stories, too, that we've heard over the years and had people approach us. And what I'm kind of wondering, what is the number one thing an inventor can do to increase his or her chances for success in bringing the product to market in the inventor or from the inventor planet to the business planet?
Well, you know, I think personally the absolute number one thing, and I think this is echoed a lot in the industry because I hear other professionals in the industry and other leaders in the industry say it, is simply to arm themselves with education. You have to arm yourself with education. You walk around as an inventor with this excuse me, little knapsack on your back, and every time you find a little bit of knowledge, you put it in the knapsack. And you have to absolutely arm yourself with education. That is the key. In business, when we're going to go do a contract, we do our due diligence. In school, when we want to get a good grade on an exam, we study. All these things, inventing is no different. You have to study. You have to understand why this is important. Why this is important. Now, the good news is that it is very much like most things in successful business anyway. It is a process. Inventing is a process. The idea is, sure, that's the spark. That's the smallest part. It's less than 1% of the entire process of taking a product from an idea to a commercially viable product. The idea is a little itty-bitty part of it. The rest of it is a process. Because it's a process, you can hone it in and get better at it. You can feed the machine with the same kind of idea or spark and run it through the same set of steps. So an inventor who wants to be successful on the business planet has to first recognize that it is a process and then do what it takes to learn the process. And I would guarantee you, as sure as I'm sitting here, that if an inventor can truly understand the process, each step, and get good at them, they can feed that machine with ideas over and over again. They will quickly learn to discard those ideas that they can see will not make it through the process. They won't invest money in them. They won't lose their money. And eventually they'll settle down into a pattern of being able to put the best ideas into their machine and take them through the process. And they will absolutely at some point be successful. There's no doubt in my mind.
Well, Mark, the metaphor of a knapsack, you know, with education experience really helps me understand the difference between an inventor that's an employee and an inventor that's a, you know, owner of a small business. Because I've discovered that the learning curve with an employee inventor is a lot different than somebody that's already, you know, in business. They started their own business, they're successful in their business, and then they invent something, usually in their industry. And they're a lot better person to work with, I guess, because their knapsack is a lot fuller. And the employee inventor, I guess their knapsack's kind of light.
That's absolutely true. The knapsack is light mostly because they don't know to take the time to fill it. They run into all these lessons on a daily basis, even in their workplace. Even if they're not responsible for a decision, it's still there to learn from. But they have to have the motivation and they have to have the desire to take that information. An employee inventor or a business owner, an entrepreneur inventor, which an entrepreneur inventor really always make the best inventors because they have an intuition about both sides. But they're going to be exposed to those business challenges and those business rules much more often. They're going to learn them whether they like them or not. And they're going to have the realization that they exist. When we talk about opening an inventor's mind to the business planet, it oftentimes inventors want to see what's there. They don't want to acknowledge what's there, but they can't see. And so they oftentimes don't want to admit that those rules exist. I'm sure you guys have been on the same calls I have where, you know, you spend an hour and a half and explaining to an inventor what about their product isn't going to be market viable. And at the end of an hour and a half phone call, they go, well, you just don't get it. You know, and I always chuckle when I hear that, and I go, okay, you know. Because at the end of that whole conversation, at the end of explaining all those things, the inventor just closes their mind. And because you're saying something contrary to what they believe and what they know and what they hope. And so just like a 4-year-old or a 2-year-old who closes their eyes and, you know, if they close their eyes and can't see you, you must not be there. Well, that's kind of the same thing inventors often do to the realities of the business world. What I find a lot in your discussion about developing for the trades is you do find a lot of inventors who develop for the trades, And there are four types of inventing. My experience is that there are really four types of inventions out there. There's inventions for broad-based consumer products. There's inventions for the trades. There's inventions for institutional uses, things that might work in a prison or things that might work in a lunchroom cafeteria but wouldn't work in a trade or wouldn't work in broad-based consumer use. And then the fourth are inventions that go nowhere. And, of course, that's the largest group is inventions that go nowhere. One of the things I often find myself doing is trying to explain to inventors that when you invent for the trade, you're inventing for a small segment of the populace. And so it's harder to get traction when you're inventing for the trade. It's harder to get traction when you're inventing for the institutional sector. It's much easier to get traction when you're inventing for a broad base. That being said, think of those, you wake up one day and you decide, hey, I want to go and be a painter. And so you go to the store and you have a choice. You can go and you can buy some brushes and you can buy some canvas and you can buy some paint. You can put it all together and buy a book and go sit down in your living room and teach yourself how to paint. Or if you're smart, you're going to buy one of these 1995 paint-by-numbers kits. And you're going to go home and you're going to try your hand at this paint-by-numbers kit. And it's going to tell you whether you like painting. It's going to tell you whether you're any good at painting. It's going to tell you how to use a brush and how to use a paint. Oftentimes we find inventors who want to invent these hugely complicated products. When in fact they should really just buy that paint-by-numbers kit, find a very simple retail broad product and invent to that and use that as their education, use that as their learning curve. Understand that at the end of the day that's not going to be the one they're known for. It's the one they're learning with. And then slowly ramp up to more complicated invention.
Well, paint-by-numbers works for me. Well, Mark, how can our listeners get in touch with you if they want to learn more?
Well, actually, you know, the best place to find me is on Facebook, Mark T. Ryland on Facebook. From there, you can get to my blog. I do write an inventor's blog every day, Monday through Friday. Oftentimes, inventors will contact me with questions, and I'll address them on the blog. Or you can always get a hold of me through my company, Obvious Ideas.
Okay, so it's obviousideas, LLC.com?
It is. Okay. It is. Or mark@obviousideasllc.com is my email. So.
Okay. Well, thanks for being on the show today, Mark. You know, our listeners have gotten some really great nuggets and learnings that they can really use in their launch and their journey.
Well, I appreciate you having me. I always enjoy talking about inventing.
Okay, and it shows that your passion comes right on through. Well, thanks again.
You're welcome. You guys have a great day.
You too. It was another great show, Bill.
Well, you know, it really was, Ron. I really enjoyed that. And I want to give a special thanks to today's sponsor, Patents and More, your trusted guide to the innovation jungle.
And tune in each week at the same time to listen live, or you can go to our blog at thelaunchhour.businessradiox.com to listen at your convenience. This is Ron Reardon, Bill McHenry, signing off another great session of The Launch Hour.